I speak to you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. As I begin to address you this morning, I'd like to thank the Dean and the congregation for giving me an opportunity to share some thoughts with you. And as I begin to do so, I'm thinking that not a single one of you is aware just how historic this moment is for me. I am referring to this act of me standing in front of you, somewhat on a pedestal, to deliver a sermon. It is the second time in my life that I have had to do so. But the experience, the first experience, ended on a somewhat ambivalent note. You may recall that in the 60s and 70s, the church was asking itself serious questions about the extent of its social engagement. There were anti-colonial struggles all over the world, and serious questions were being asked. On whose side was the church? Was the church not too distant from the lives of those it purported to serve? The decision, after many agonizing debates, was that the church probably was a little bit distant. Now, I was one of the beneficiaries of this decision, because all sorts of people began to be invited to give sermons. And this included the likes of me, who, as president of the Students' Representative Council at the then University of Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland in Lesotho, was invited by our campus church warden to, guess what, deliver a sermon. So I delivered a sermon. I don't remember what its subject was, but it must have been a political fire and brimstone kind of sermon expected of a student activist. I must have called for the colonial oppressors and white racists all over the world to be condemned, and may have declared that Karl Marx was right. Religion was the opium of the people. The warden was not impressed, because at the end of the service, despite my brazen cheek, I still wanted approval of the kind student politicians, or perhaps any politician for that matter, secretly desires. That, the warden delivered his verdict in a rather telling manner, was not quite a sermon. So some 30 years later, I begin my second experience of giving a sermon with some trepidation, wondering what the dean's verdict is going to be at the end of this service. I'm telling this story not so much to entertain you with a bit of personal history, but also as a rhetorical entry to the theme of my sermon. I want to explore with you the theme of perspective. The word perspective has several but closely related meanings, as my Webster's dictionary showed me. But the one I want to hold on to this morning defines perspective as the appearance to the eye of objects in relation to their relative distance and positions. The appearance to the eye of objects in relation to their relative distance and positions. The key expressions here are appearance to the eye. objects in relation to and relative distance and positions. Now, if you want to experience the meaning of perspective from this kind of, beyond this kind of technical definition, try to walk regularly on the many of Cape Town's lovely walking trails, as I do. The first time I entered a forest I had never been to at all, I recall being hesitant, wondering what kind of being of the kind that myself am often subject to a fertile imagination. What unknown threats lay ahead of me? But then you realize after a while as you move on and nothing happens to you except the increasingly joyful experience of being in communion with nature, that if there were any threats at all, they really existed in your own imagination. The forest in front of you turns out not to be a place teeming with puff adders and wrinkles, ghosts and bats and spiders waiting to poison you, and bewitched caves ready to swallow you up, and the spirits of angry ancestors accusing you of having forgotten them. Sometimes you wake up in the morning and the sky is overcast and it's raining. Or there are fierce gales that tell you not to leave the comfort of your bed. But if you are determined to go out and walk, you will ignore these threats and go out and climb that mountain, only to discover soon how your assumptions are thrown out of the window. Before you even reach the top of the mountain, you literally climb into the sun. And when you turn back to look at the landscape below you, you discover that the neighborhood next to yours is awash in sunlight, whereas yours has been darkened by rain-bearing clouds. And you learn at that moment how easy it is to be conditioned by the immediate circumstances around you, how easy it is to be fooled into the conclusion that the whole world is exactly as where you are. At this point, let's return to our definition of perspective and recall the key expressions in it that we identified. The first one, appearance to the eyes, is expressed with a kind of scientific objectivity as something that happens to the eye. But in fact, it is your eye. Through your eyes, things appear to you. But things appear to you in relation to other things. For example, your eyes make you see and experience the house in which you are when you wake up on an overcast day intending to go out walking. In relation to the house that you see from the top of the mountain in sunshine after having decided that you will go out anyway. You experience the same house from different perspectives, depending on your distance from it and the position from which you view it, whether at its own level, inside of it, or from the top of the mountain, far from it. This may get you to ask the question, what is reality? Which is the real house? Which is the real forest? Is it the one you walked into the first time, or the one you get used to after finding out that it really is no threat to you? You may come to the conclusion that perhaps reality is, after all, a matter of perspective. That both houses, both forests are real, depending on the perspective from from which they are viewed and experienced. If so, then that thing we know as reality is really something never constant. It changes all the time according to your perspective. This realization leads to something even more intriguing. Experiencing the world from multiple perspectives presents the world to you as something constantly changing depending on where you are when you are looking at it. But the miracle that suddenly strikes you is that you become aware that there is one thing that remains constant through all the multiple perspectives that you experience. It is the experience of yourself as the one that experiences all the changes. You, the experiencing self, are the constant feature in the transformation around you. Even if the experience changes you, you are still aware of yourself as changing. This is intriguing. For it puts you in a position of immense possibility. Being aware of yourself as a participant in your own making, being made by others who see you from their own perspectives to which you have to respond, and being aware of your capacity to change the world the more you experience it from various perspectives, and how in turn the world changes you. Society then strikes you as something that is the product of multiple perspectives intersecting in all manner of ways. Now let me take you back to your first experience of walking on one of the trails of Cape Town that I mentioned to, and your first experience of entering the forest. I do this because I want us to draw some conclusions about what I mean when I say you have just found yourself in a position of immense responsibility. This happens when you realize that the forest soon becomes a journey into yourself. When you realize that walking through it often means being confronted by a series of decision moments. If the weather changes, do you want to go on or not? What lies there just beyond that ravine? Will it be dangerous for me to proceed beyond it? If there is a possibility of stepping onto a snake, do I return home or do I press on with my adventure, not knowing where it will take me? If I climb higher, do I risk a heart attack? Am I fit enough to take it? It all boils down to this question: how much uncertainty are you prepared to take? In confronting this question, you get to know a little more of yourself. How much are you prepared to learn or unlearn? The question confronts you with the extent of your own limits, and it humbles you tremendously. So who are you? You are the one that remains constant through changing perspectives of reality. You are the constant consciousness that experiences change. Your consciousness is a stable factor in the transformation around you. It is the treasure that allows you to navigate through change. What has all this got to do with celebrating 10 years of democracy? It has become common to look at the past 10 years and count off the number of things we have achieved. We can refer to the constitution that we created, to the experience of how having voted three times peacefully, We can refer to a million houses that have been built, to millions of people who now have running water, electricity, and telephones, to hundreds of thousands who now have access to education up to the highest levels, to a few of us who become millionaires overnight, to the ease with which you can obtain a passport to travel overseas, to the enhanced status of our country in the world, to a stable economy and the maturing systems of governance, to our being blessed at all levels with remarkable leaders who have inspired the people around the world. All these and more constitute multiple perspectives from which to experience South Africa since 1994. Yet I believe that the revolution that really occurred is often not fully appreciated. It is the extent to which each and every one of us appreciates just how much depends on how we experience ourselves as the stable consciousness amidst change. How adventurous we have been in exploring this new world called South Africa. To what extent have we pushed the limits of our individual and community experiences? I don't believe we have gone far enough. And why is it so important for us to attempt to do so? It is because the greatest legacy of our 10 years of democracy, whether you are rich or poor, whether black or white, whether man or woman, child or adult, is more than the houses, the running water, the electricity, and many other conveniences that are so vital as a measure of change. It is more profoundly our willingness, each and every one of us, to be affected by the full implications of being the consciousness that experiences change. Change can occur around you without your experiencing fully. That happens when you fail to realize just how much you are affected by it. When you experience change as something that affects others and not yourself. The greatest damage of apartheid is how it conditions all of us to experience the world from a single perspective. That is how it killed our capacity for reflection, self-reflection. When that happens, our humanity was terribly diminished. Apartheid said to each of us, the whole world is like the world you are in your township or in your million rand home. Experience life only where you are, in your designated area and designated group. Apartheid said, your paradise is where you are, divided, lonely, and hostile. How easy it is to be fooled into the conclusion that the whole world is exactly as where you are. The last 10 years has been a discovery of the profound blindness of that conclusion. You want to be able to turn to the next person next to you and say, look the person in the eye and say, where do you live? If you have never been to that person's neighborhood, perhaps you want to make it a point to go there so that you can experience a new environment and test your limits. Let your fellow congregant take your hand and lead you into the forest for the first time. You will feel uncertain and vulnerable, wondering what dangers lie ahead, whether you should return home in fear or proceed in uncertainty. You will realize that once you come to terms with your fears and they have disappeared, you are suddenly free to experience the world differently. Your journey of discovery will lead you to the realization that there was really nothing to fear because people in a new neighborhood were not really different from you, only that they viewed life from a different perspective. That happens when new experiences cease to be a threat. That is the untold story of our new country. South Africa is embracing uncertainty with some confidence because the ability to do so is a new source of our creativity. Our country is about embracing multiple perspectives. It is a spirit that is embodied in our constitution. Our constitution is about the acknowledgement and the management of multiple perspectives. We have come some way in that direction, but we have not gone far enough. Indeed, our freedom is the increasing opportunities for experiencing multiple perspectives and learning to draw meaning from those interactions. Often those interactions will be stressful, but if you stay the course, the results always yield to us the experience of beauty. Beauty is something you experience as the deepest kind of reassurance after you have endured and learned from the stresses of uncertainty. So, I draw close to my sermon. As I do so, I feel more confident that whatever you may think of it, I have approached it from my own perspective. Indeed, if the church sought to come closer to the world 30 years ago, it should have accepted the risk that a student might push the limits, because the church opened itself to being a site for multiple perspectives to play themselves out. Nor should there be any fear that there would be a relativist free-for-all. There is nothing more unifying than the values of tolerance, compassion, humility, and open-mindedness. If we allow these values to mediate between us, we draw the fullest meaning of the 10 years of our democracy. There is much in this for the church and for our cathedral to contemplate. How do we measure up to the challenge of our country in this regard? I believe this remains a fundamental question for us to ask ourselves in the next 10 years. So, I'm about to go down now from my temporal pedestal, where I have lorded over you for 10 to 15 minutes, from the perspective of an honorary preacher. I enjoyed the thought of it and have enjoyed the reality of it. I return now with equal joy to the perspective of being an ordinary member of my congregation, and must now end my sermon. Thank you.